Okay, Alexander, let's discuss an article that you sent me from the Financial Times, which is admitting that Russia is indeed resilient to sanctions that the West might throw at them. And all of this, of course, is related to this Russia imminent invasion of Ukraine, which, you know, they just can't let up on it. And every day we get more and more stories. Newland said that she's got, what'd you say, 8 points or 18 points where they're going to hit Russia with. And Psaki came out with her statement saying that the Russians are preparing a false flag. And Canada's deploying special forces to Ukraine. The UK is sending military equipment, non-lethal military equipment to Ukraine. And, you know, they're stuck on this Russia invasion of Ukraine. And, you know, the sanctions have been focused at this point in time on Nord Stream 2. And I would say on SWIFT, cutting off of SWIFT. And of course, we had to talk about no iPhone components and stuff like that, which is ridiculous. But anyway, what do you think about this Financial Times article and all the other sideshow activity that is taking place in and around Ukraine?
Well, before we get to the Financial Times article, I just wanted to mention another article which has been in Bloomberg, which says that Putin is winning without moving a single tank, because every one of these moves that we're talking about, all the sending of, you know, advisors and special forces to Ukraine, all that does is expose the military futility of the whole exercise. Because, to be straightforward about it, everybody accepts that in a war with Ukraine, with Russia, Ukraine would lose. So what are you sending your special forces to Ukraine for? They'd just be obliterated if there was a war. They're not going to make any difference. This isn't going to change the military balance in any way. And the sanctions, it's been fascinating to see how we're gradually moving away from a position of we're going to crater the Russian economy to increasing doubts about the capacity of sanctions to achieve the effect intended on Russia and the real danger of blowback on the West. Now, the Financial Times article that you mentioned, it talks about Russia's efforts to reduce its reliance on the global financial system have made it better prepared to weather the sanctions that the US and Europe have warned would follow. And then, meanwhile, the EU has not weaned itself off Russian gas, making any restrictions on Russian energy exports potentially self-damaging. And then the article then goes on to say that the problems don't stop at just gas. Russia is now a key exporter, supplier to the world economy of a whole range of strategic minerals and components like titanium, like aluminium, by the way. That's not mentioned in the Financial Times, but Russia is a critically important aluminium producer. It produces, it's a major producer of chemical fertilizer and the products that go to make up chemical fertilizer and all of these sort of things. And if we go come back to the issue of gas and gas supplies, we now know that there's been a series of reports from the State Department and from the Treasury to the US government, which say that they've consulted with energy companies. Energy companies are coming back and saying they can't replace Russian gas. Russian gas is too important to the global energy mix. If Russian gas is stopped, if Russian gas is prevented, then all that would happen is that energy prices would simply explode and there'd be major gas shortages, fuel shortages, energy cutouts across Europe. And on top of that, we read in this Financial Times article how the Russian financial system has been stress-tested almost to destruction by the Russian government, how the Russian government has had a team working ever since 2014 within the finance ministry to make it as resilient to sanctions as possible, how it would absorb sanctions, because, as I said, it's been stress tested to such an extraordinary degree. But if Russia were disconnected from sanctions, there's a greater prospect that gas supplies to Europe would be interrupted because the Europeans would lack a quickly available payment mechanism. With gas shortages then exploding, there would be an energy crisis in Europe. And of course, we've now been reading elsewhere in the German business newspaper, Handelsblatt, that the Germans have apparently told the United States that disconnecting Russia from SWIFT is not an option. So Victoria Nuland can talk about her 18 ways of responding to the Russians. Dmitry Peskov, Putin's spokesman, has ridiculed that, by the way. He said that, you know, our responses are going to be much more straightforward and much more simple. We don't need 18 ways to respond. We only need a few. So, I mean, you know, but Victoria Nuland can talk in this way. People like Senator Menendez can talk in this way. But with every day that passes, with the economic data, the economic intelligence flowing in to the US government, to the German government, to the British government, they are beginning to shift their position. So we now have Annalena Baerbock, the Atlanticist, ultra-hardline, anti-Russian foreign minister. She's in Moscow, talking in incredibly conciliatory ways about how, for Germany, the relationship with Russia is indispensable. I mean, she's been talking in this kind of way while she's in Moscow. We have, as I said, reports from Handelsblatt that the idea of disconnecting from SWIFT has been taken off the agenda. We understand that the US itself is now busy trying to think of what it can do in the event of this conflict in Ukraine. And the British, for all their strong words, we've just had an announcement that from Ben Wallace, the British Defence Secretary, he's now invited the Russian Defence Minister, Sergei Shoigu, to London. Quite why and for what purpose isn't clear, but again, it looks like some kind of an olive branch.
Yeah, it sounds to me that all the warmongers, the neocons and the neoliberal warmongers, they're trying frantically to find any type of weaknesses, any types of chinks in the Russian armor so that they can justify some sort of conflict or some sort of war, but they just can't find it. Meanwhile, the other side of the power struggle is saying, look, just forget about it. There's nothing there. This was a failed effort. Let's move on to the next drama that we're going to cook up. But that seems to be the dynamics right now. Yep. Is one part of the oligarchy, of the elite, of the Atlanticist groups is kind of saying, you know, let's move on. Nothing to see here. But there seems to be a part of this this Atlanticist group that is saying, no, let's keep on looking. There must be something here.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly right. They're probing, they're looking for chinks, as you rightly said, in the Russian armor. They're coming up with none so far. But what they're discovering is not so much chinks, but gaping holes in their own armor. But of course, people like Blinken and Nuland, who are absolutely part of this ideological project, it's going to be very, very difficult for them to give up on this. So that's why they are constantly pushing for some sort of massive, you know, conflict with Russia. And of course, when they're being told, which they are increasingly, that, you know, this isn't practical, this is going to be incredibly dangerous, all that is doing is it is making them incredibly angry. But then, of course, you get the other side, as you correctly say, of the equation. People like, the anti-China hawks, who have been saying for a long time that they want to dial down conflict with Russia. They're starting to say, well, look, we've got to accept this business with the Russians. It just isn't working. Let's move on to something else. The problem is there are so many factions in Washington. I was reading an article recently, which was actually published some months ago, back in the early summer, which said that within the foreign policy team, within Biden's foreign policy team, there are two different sets of hawks. There is Blinken and Nuland, who are the anti-Russia hawks. They're fixated on Europe. They're fixated on Russia. That's their obsession. And against them, there's Sullivan and Doshi, who are the anti-China hawks, who are laser-focused on China. But there's no one in overall charge who can somehow arbitrate between the two, because the president himself is weak to the extent that he's able to exercise any authority at all. So you've got that problem. But what I suspect is going to happen is over the next few days and weeks, you're going to get more and more of the economic advisers, people in the Treasury Department, people in the Commerce Department, people in the various arms, the industrial and economic arms of the various European governments, especially Germany's, but also France, Italy. They're going to come round and say, look, this idea of a conflict with Russia over Ukraine, it's an absolute non-starter. And from simple economic reasons, we can't do it. By the way, it's because they're running out of real options that they're coming up with fantastical ones, like sending special forces, which could achieve nothing, to Ukraine, like talking about waging partisan war in Ukraine, which is a hopeless and extremely dangerous idea, by the way, dangerous idea for the West, that is, and ideas about sanctioning Putin in person, which is also a pointless idea. I mean, what is that supposed to achieve anyway?
Yeah, I just want to say that these hawks, these anti-Russian hawks, still might win. I mean, you know, we've seen crazy stuff happen in the past couple of years. So, you know, they still might sanction Russia off of SWIFT, or they still might do some sort of proxy partisan training of Ukraine forces in Europe. Who knows? It doesn't look like that, but I always leave a 5% on the table because, you know, it's a crazy world out there and who knows what's going to happen. But looking at Annalena Baerbock, I mean, she goes, the German foreign minister, she goes to Russia. Obviously, she was told to stand down because she has been anti-Russia, you know, let's go to war, let's take on Russia, let's cut off Russia, let's sanction Russia from top to bottom for God knows how long. But obviously, she was told, look, when you go to Russia, stand down. Talk nice, it's over. And that's what she did. And it looks like the calculus now is, as I'm watching the media as well, is we got to let go of Russia, and we have to now maybe refocus again on China. Let's take another run at China, because I'm hearing a lot of talk of the Beijing Games. And a lot of news media outlets are starting to talk the Beijing Games this, the human rights violations that, the lab over there. And you can start to hear a lot of news pundits who are coming out and saying, you know, look at China as they're going to have the Olympic Games. Look at all the things that they're doing wrong. And I'm starting to sit there and say, okay, so maybe we're going to dial down Russia, nothing there, and now let's take another go at China. And that may very well be what we may be looking at as we enter February.
Absolutely. And then you don't talk about Russia at all. And you don't, you let the whole story about the Russian invasion of Ukraine die. you don't explain why it never happened. You just pretend that it, you just forget about it. You know, it was something that never took place. It was a story that never happened. You just move the circus on to the next field. I mean, that it does seem to me is very much the playbook nowadays. I mean, what happened yesterday never happened. There was never any issue about Russia invading Ukraine. Everything is as always. So I think that is entirely likely. The one thing I would say is that you put it at 5% that the Blinkens, the Newlands, the people of that kind would win. I'm afraid I would put it much higher than that. I mean, one should not underestimate the ability of these people to cause enormous trouble. I mean, there's a whole senatorial delegation in Kiev at the moment. There's you know, rumblings in Kiev itself. You know that they you know they're prepared to fight to the death. It's quite possible somebody in Kiev could do something unbelievably reckless and unbelievably stupid. And of course, Nuland, who is a pretty tough and ruthless political operator who knows how to pull the strings, she might be able to provoke something as well. I think on balance that they'll be put back in their box, but you know, don't discount them. I mean, as you rightly say, they haven't, these guys, these people haven't yet lost. They're still there and they're still fighting and they might win. So I think on balance, you're absolutely right. I think in a few weeks' time, Russia will be yesterday's news, which will mean that it is no news. China will become the big news story again. We've had a really weird, very bizarre story about a Chinese so-called spy giving money to a British MP, for example. It's an odd story, which perhaps repays some discussion. But I mean, you know, you've got we've clearly got again an attempt to move the dial back to China, and it could very well be that the Russia thing will just be allowed to fade out.
Yeah, I mean, they always keep it, you know, simmering in the background, so they can bring it up again. Yeah. So, I mean, they'll never extinguish the Russia thing.
No, of course not.
But they'll just put
it,
you know, on the back burner and you know, put the dial lever to simmer a little bit. And then they're going to focus on China. And I think the Olympic Games is just, it's just too much of a shiny object, too much of an opportunity for these anti-China people to let go of. I mean, there's no way they're just going to let the Olympic Games go without trying to stir some sort of controversy or conflict or something.
Exactly. It's almost a compulsion for these people. And I mean, I spoke about, you know, the divisions between the Blinken group, which is fixated on Russia, and the Sullivan group, which is fixated on China. But ultimately, they're both neocons. They're just neocons with a different focus. But as they're both neocons, ultimately, you know, if they can find something to gang up against, they will do it. And they will gang up. I mean, Nuland will be no doubt bitterly disappointed that she hasn't got her war against Russia. But that's not to say that, you know, she will be unhappy if there's a smash up with the Chinese. On the contrary, they revel in that kind of thing.
Yeah. Here's an off topic question that I'm kind of related. And I don't know if you even have the answer to this. Because it relates a little bit to Djokovic, but not so much. Listen to what I'm going to ask you. Okay, Australia kicked out Djokovic. There's rumors that Macron in France and in the UK, they're going to pass the same type of restrictions for jabs in order for tennis players to come and play. Do you know what China's policy is going to be for the Olympics? That's my first question. I don't know. Do you know if they're going to put this, everyone has to be jabbed in order to come to the Olympics? Or do you think they're going to take a much more broad and lenient type of policy to say, look, as long as you're a competing athlete and you have the necessary paperwork and the visas and the tests, you're fine? That's just my first question. And wouldn't it be interesting if they do take that type of broad policy towards athletes and say, everyone's welcome, we're going to work with the athletes regardless of their beliefs and just try to get them to participate? And then when people start to question their human rights and stuff like that, the Chinese can come and say, well, you know, you guys are one to talk, because for us, when we host a sporting event, we want it to be inclusive of everybody, and we want to work with the athletes and their personal beliefs and their health beliefs, while you guys in the West, Australia, France, possibly UK, this is what we're hearing about France, UK, you want to cut everybody off from competing in international events. I was just thinking about that, and I just wanted to kind of throw it at you.
My own guess, and it has to be a guess. I can't be certain what's being talked about in Zhongnanhai, you know, the Chinese leaders' compound in Beijing. But my guess is that the Olympics is so important to China that they will bend over backwards to be as flexible as they can to get the largest number of athletes and sports people participating. I don't think they're going to want to do a Djokovic. I mean, I don't think they want anything like that to happen to spoil the Olympic Games, especially with the Olympics coming under attack. Now, I'm going to say something else. I think that sooner or later, probably sooner rather than later, the Chinese are going to have to bend anyway on their zero acceptance policy. I think that it's becoming increasingly unsustainable, and I think it's going to be something that the Chinese will have to re-examine. But that's going to be difficult for them because they've invested so much and so much propaganda in it. But I can't see how they can keep it going indefinitely any longer. And I'm sure there are people in the Politburo and people advising the Politburo who are explaining this to them. But I think on balance, to come back to your question, I think they will relax on entry of athletes to the games. And who knows? I mean, the Chinese have an extraordinarily well-honed propaganda machine. I call it that. I think one should. I call propaganda wherever it comes from. They have a very well-honed propaganda machine. Why shouldn't they why shouldn't they run with the story that China is welcoming to athletes and respects them and respects their rights and their feelings, whereas the Westerners don't?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that, and I thought to myself, you know, that could be something that the Chinese propaganda machine does run with, if it is the case that they're going to be accepting of all athletes, and it is a weakness that the West may have if they do decide to run at the yes. Chinese with the various human rights talking points.
Mm. Absolutely.
All right. We will leave it there. The Durant.locals.com, Odyssey, BitChute, Rumble, and Super U, and go to the Durant shop. Use the code GOODDAY, as in that mug,
right there.
And get 10% off all merchandise. Take care.